Whether you are Gen Z, a millennial, or a baby boomer, the United Methodist Insurance Program is here to help you plan, protect, and restore. Visit www.uminsure.org for a free rate quote today.
Member of the millennial generation, I feel like we just recently shook the label of kid in some people's minds. And that's great, especially considering the fact that the Pew Research Center defines my generation as comprised of 24 to 39 year olds in 2020. But if you stop and think about that age range, millennials aren't even really college kids anymore, at least not in the traditional sense. Those graduating with a four-year bachelor's degree, achieved often in 4 years or much faster, are now squarely within the next generation. And it's that generation that we're talking about on today's episode of the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast. Thank you to everybody for listening. My name is Dan Wunderlich. I'm a United Methodist pastor, and our guest today is Jeremy Steele. Jeremy is also a United Methodist elder, and you might remember him from a previous episode all about reaching millennials. Jeremy, welcome back to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
Well, it's kind of crazy that just a year after you and I were talking about reaching millennials, we're back to cover the next generation. But right. The truth is, we're in the midst of a giant generational shift. And if you kind of think of generations moving up the ladder from being children to being college students and young adults to being kind of traditional working adults and parents and so on, that shift has essentially happened in the last year or so. The youngest millennials are squarely in grad school or starting their careers. The oldest members of this new generation are starting college, and they're just going to completely take over that pipeline.
Right.
But before we jump into the new generation specifically, I was wondering if you can share with us about why it's important for churches to understand generations and specifically keep up with shifts like this.
Yeah, that it's something that I think churches forget. It's the thing that like just keeps getting moved down the list. But you know, we're talking about marketing and communication. Like, if you want to communicate to a generation that is not your own, that is not native, then you've got to learn how to speak their language. And because of your own sort of generational bias, there are things that you can do accidentally that get people to turn off, disengage. And there's also things that you don't know to do or that you don't value in the same way as a different generation. And so you don't communicate as clearly as you want, or you dismiss some sorts of communication as less real or less important, and miss out on being effective in the way that you are reaching a generation that is other than your own. And as we know, the people in the leadership in the Methodist Church, both you and I, are not in this next generation that's called Generation Z. And that means that we are all needing to pay attention to how we're communicating and what it is that that generation is looking for, listening for, and what they're hearing when we are communicating in our sort of native language.
That's so true. And I guess, to be fair, the pendulum swings the other way, too. I know a fair amount of church communicators who are in the millennial generation, and they probably got that job because they're good at things like social media. Right. And they need to understand the older generations as well and understand how they communicate. It's not just a top-down thing.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, this new generation is most commonly known as Gen Z or Generation Z, though it's far from the only name you'll hear. First, there was the placeholder named post-millennial. And then even Generation Z was sort of meant to be a placeholder. Like, I guess millennials were at one time known as Generation Y because they followed Gen X. Some other names you might find are iGen, sort of like iPad, iPhone, digital natives, the founders, and even the homeland generation, although lots of those really haven't ended up catching on. And so far, we've been referring to age ranges offered by the Pew Research Center, which places the millennial to Gen Z transition at 1996, making them roughly Gen Z ages 8 to 23. Another common place for churches to look at demographic information and research is Barna. It's a faith-based research firm. They place the transition point at 1999. But one thing the research data seems to agree on, no matter which date you use, is that Gen Z is on pace to be larger, more diverse, and more educated than millennials. They make up nearly a third of the world population already, and roughly 18% of the United States population. So I'm wondering, Jeremy, as we just cover these sort of top line numbers, is there anything about these demographics that you've seen that really stand out to you?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think that's helpful for people to kind of grasp this generation is that date is important. Those dates are important in that basically, so Facebook launches in 2004, right? So right. The oldest millennials are not yet teenagers, right? The oldest Gen Z are either 4 or 8 years old. Every other Gen Z is basically grown up from either the day they were born, social media existed, or, you know, shortly thereafter. And that's very important piece because we who are in older generations have a varying level of degree of seriousness about social media, right?
Yeah.
If you grew up picking up a telephone and not a cell phone, or if you grew up picking up a newspaper instead of, an online news source, right? Each of those things, like whatever was your native thing, seems the real thing. And the other pieces seem in some ways less just by default for most people. And so that's important because we've got to kind of rethink all of what we're kind of imagining as communicators, because they don't value those sort of traditional communication methods higher as in the same way that older people, millennials, Gen X, and older seem to value those things. And so it's really just important to kind of grasp that. And then the other piece, like we can't really underscore the diversity piece of this. And we're talking diversity in every imaginable metric. It is an incredibly diverse generation. And that means that churches need to understand that when they are not diverse, either in their pews, on their platforms, and particularly in the way in their communication, like with the face that they are choosing to put forward in their community, when it's not a diverse face, it feels like a non-native face. It feels like somebody, these are not my people. And so that diversity thing is really, really important.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned tech and social media, and we will come back to that. But let's hang on diversity for a minute. Back in November of 2018, Pew put out a really interesting article titled "Early Benchmarks Show Post-Millennials on Track to Be Most Diverse, Best Educated Generation Yet." And one of the things that I found really, really interesting was that they compared the early boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, and Gen Z at roughly the same point in each generation.
Right.
So 1968, 1986, 2002, and 2018 respectively. So sort of the same point in the arc of a generation.
Right.
They found that 48% of Gen Z are racial or ethnic minorities, compared to 39% of millennials, 30% of Gen X, and only 18% of early boomers at the same point in their generation. And for Gen Z as a whole, 25% identify as Hispanic, which is a leap from 18% in the millennial generation. So you essentially go from 1 in 5 to 1 in 4. And what I find interesting is that when I hear about this demographic shift, you hear about it all the time in the context of politics and voting. You know, this is a presidential election year. You hear people talking about the base and the diversity of the base and whether the growing diversity in America will benefit one party or the other. But you don't hear it quite as often in conversations around the future of the church. You do hear
in pockets. And that's why I love recently we had Eileen Jimenez on the podcast to talk about Hispanic Latino ministry. But Jeremy, do you think this is a huge blind spot for majority white churches, or am I maybe just not listening to the right conversations?
No, it's a huge blind spot. And particularly for the United Methodist Church, we often think of ourselves, you know, because we're a mainline denomination, we think of ourselves as kind of facing these things a little bit better. But
yeah,
but the statistics show that we are in the bottom three, like we are in the three least diverse Christian denominations in America. So we have this, I think, perception of ourselves that we value diversity often, but we may mentally, cognitively value it, but we are not doing things to actually increase diversity. We have a really checkered past, and part of the reason for our lack of diversity is because of the ways in which we have a very racist and segregationist history, and going way back, I mean, like all the way to Richard Allen and Francis Asbury, and so that we have sort of inherited that history, and that means that we've got to really be intentional about addressing this issue, and so I right now am living in Mobile, Alabama. We have a history in the South, in the United States, around racism and segregation and all that. And so one of the things in our church's sort of mission, we want to be a growing, diverse, multi-site congregation and then we add the piece of the Methodist, our Methodist mission statement to, you know, disciple for the transformation of the world, right?
Right.
But the diversity piece means that we actually have to address diversity out loud from the pulpit, right? We need to have in all of our meetings, in all of our conversations up front, okay, why are there no people of color on the stage this week? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are there no people of color on our staff parish relations committee? That's not the case for us right now, but you know, like those kind of questions happening at all the levels. And then we also know that communication is not just a mirror of what is happening, right? It's also a molder of what is happening. Mm-hmm. And so we have the ability to communicate forward and communicate our place into a new reality. That communication is part of that. And so that means that like, if we put out a publication, we don't put out an all white publication, right? Even if it's difficult to find faces of color because our church has less diversity than we want, we intentionally make that a value in our communication. So we're putting forth an image of diversity that says that we value this, even if we may not be doing as well at that as we want. And so I say all that to say, we've had many conversations over the last 3 years I've had many conversations over the last 3 years with Generation Z. And when we have directly addressed diversity from the platform, when we have done things like had a full range of Vacation Bible School characters that are not white, right? All kinds of different ways that value diversity has been reached out. I have had many, many, many conversations, primarily with Gen Z, who have come up and said, I'm really thankful that you're doing that. Like, I'm really thankful that I'm part of a church that, you know, recognizes the history of segregation and slavery and the current problem of racism in our community and is speaking out against that, right? Like, every time we've done that, we've gotten comments from all kinds of people. But we've gotten really passionate comments from Gen Z, particularly, and younger millennials, because what happens when we do those things is that we're speaking in their native language. You know, when the boomers, 18% of them, when they were growing up, only 18% were not white. Like, it doesn't feel like it's that important. In fact, I've had some conversations with boomers in our context that said, I just don't understand why this is such a big deal, right? It wasn't a big deal for them because they didn't grow up with people of color all around them all the time, their best friends, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so,
right.
And so, you know, there's also some coaching conversations to say, well, you know, I understand that, but you know, let's talk about these other generations, how diverse they are. Like if we aren't being careful, like we're pushing them out just by the fact that we aren't addressing it. Right. And it's a godly thing to talk about, right? God created everybody, loves everybody. So it's not outside of the bounds of our sort of theological task.
Well, and along those same lines, I know, and this question is a sensitive question. It's a sensitive topic. And you and I are talking about this from a church marketing perspective and understanding people perspective, not necessarily trying to take sides in the current debate going on in our denomination. But you sometimes hear the same questions. Why does this matter? Or it's such a small part of the population. Why is this such a big deal? Why do we have to talk about this when it comes to issues of human sexuality?
Right.
And there are massive shifts happening in perspective and sometimes even identity within this generation. And so, Jeremy, I know you found some interesting statistics in this area related to Gen Z.
Yeah. So there's been some work done kind of trying to understand how they are experiencing sexuality and identifying. So one of the interesting metrics that's been done is asking people to identify themselves on a sort of continuum of sexuality. At one point, on one side being exclusively heterosexual and at the other side being exclusively homosexual, which is problematic sometimes in that scale, but that's the scale. And it's like six or seven levels from one side to the other. So Gen Z, only 48% identify as exclusively heterosexual. So that means that more than half identify something other than exclusively heterosexual, which is a drastic difference just from the millennials. So Gen Z, 48% exclusively heterosexual. Millennials, 65%. So there's a massive shift. And when you talk a little bit more, dig a little bit more into gender identity, so millennial or the Gen Z say that 56% of them say that they know someone who is using gender neutral pronouns. And if you just go up to millennials, and we're not talking about Gen X or boomers, just up to millennials, it goes from 56 to 43%. So as communicators, it's really important for us to understand that. And which is obviously part of the problem with the issues. There's a big shift happening, a kind of massive shift from boomers all the way down to Gen Z. The difference is astronomical.
Yeah.
And so as communicators, we need to understand, obviously, there's a big difference in those two populations from the oldest to the youngest. And so that's going to create its own set of challenges in how we address that issue from, you know, whereas the older generations, boomers and older, will almost always default to thinking that exclusively heterosexuality is the norm. Right.
Right.
To when Gen Z is saying now there's less than half of that generation that themselves identifies as exclusively heterosexual. So like that's a big perception shift in the world. Like they're perceiving the world differently. They're perceiving themselves differently. And that means that we've got to pay attention. If we are not sensitive to that, right? If we are playing more to the older or more to the younger, we will lose one or the other. And so we've got to sort of walk that line of communication where we're not excluding. And then the other side of that is when we are targeting a specific generation, we need to keep in mind the way they perceive themselves and the way they perceive the world and how we are communicating around that issue.
Absolutely. And I mean, it is important to keep in mind that, you know, the Pew Center defines the ages of Gen Z currently as 8 to 23. And we all know that, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school, even early college is a time where our sense of self and our self-identity can sort of shift around. So it'll be interesting to watch that data over the next couple of years. But there is certainly enough there to say that this conversation needs to be on the table, and it can't simply be something that we shove off to the side as not important or being, you know, only relevant for such a small group that it's not worth, you know, sort of tipping the apple cart. So,
right.
Jeremy, thanks for covering that that issue.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, and this is part of the dilemma in the Methodist Church right now, right? It's a difficult issue. It's a touchy issue. It is a at times divisive issue. But the one thing that we can't do is ignore it and not talk about it. So we've got to find healthy ways to actually look at it and be realistic, you know, wide-eyed and have the conversation.
And now a word from our sponsor. The youth of today will be the leaders of tomorrow. Generation Z has proven themselves to be socially conscious and passionate about improving the world around them. As Generation Z takes a more active role in the church, our hope is that they will not only continue the church's mission, but will also work hard to protect the church's assets. Ensuring that your church has appropriate insurance coverage is an important step toward that goal, and the United Methodist Insurance Program is here to help you plan, protect, and restore. With coverages ranging from property and casualty insurance to pastoral counseling insurance, UMIP can help you with your insurance needs. Interested in learning more? Visit www.uminsure.org for a free rate quote today. The United Methodist Insurance Program can help you protect your church today and for generations to come. And now back to our show.
Well, the article about diversity within Gen Z also talks about education levels. There's some interesting points that make really kind of total sense when you think about it. Gen Z is on track to be the most educated generation, with demonstrably more folks in college, fewer in the workforce than previous generations at this point in time. Some of it can actually just be attributed to the fact that education rates have been steadily going up. And so each successive generation of parents is more educated than the previous. Mm-hmm. And so the value put on education within families maybe goes up as well. But you can cross-reference this with some of the findings that Barna has found. And one of them is that one of the top struggles for Gen Z when it comes to the church and faith, for both non-Christians and Gen Zers who identify as Christians, is the perceived conflict between science and faith. And you can begin to see how generational shifts may dictate a shift in what churches end up talking about or focusing on. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about this.
Yeah, I think it's like, so the stat is that half of church-going teens say the church seems to reject much of what science tells us about the world. And they don't see as science and faith as complementary, and that's a frustrating thing for them because they are highly educated and they do believe in science, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really, but it's also a place that for us as United Methodists, we have a really fantastic perspective on this, right?
Yeah.
We believe that all creation is Lord's, right? We're responsible for it. And we actually have this beautiful statement in the social principles. I don't know why I can't say social principles. But we say that that science is descriptions of cosmological, geological, and biological evolution are not in conflict with theology. And that is a major difference between the United Methodist Church and other denominations, other sort of theological perspectives. And in fact, so a little bit more of that is that it says we preclude science from making authoritative claims about theological issues, right? So science doesn't get to tell us about God.
Right.
And theology from making authoritative claims about scientific issues. So the theology, the theological perspective doesn't get to tell us what science is. We sort of treat them as two different toolboxes.
Yeah.
And that perspective is incredibly winsome and helpful for Generation Z who trust science and see it is in conflict with faith. And they see it that way because they've heard it. That's the It's the easy clickbait headline for that.
Right.
Right. But when they find out that there is a way to believe both in science and the Bible, right, believe in evolution and Genesis, all of a sudden, there's a whole new world open for them theologically. And they're not having to sort of compartmentalize and say, well, I saw online that somebody said that Genesis and evolution, you know, disprove each other. But, you know, so I'm just, I don't know what that means. I'm not going to deal with it. I'm just going to keep living my life. Yeah. When they can find this very wonderful United Methodist perspective of science and faith being together, being sort of dancing partners, two different tool sets to look at the same thing of God's creation, super, super helpful.
Well, and honestly, too, some of it is, I think some of this may also be reflecting the emerging debate about climate science.
Right.
And some of it is that some of the most vocal folks who are maybe critical of the perspective that the world is warming and that we need to make political or economic changes, those voices sometimes come out of the evangelical church or the conservative church. And often because they get so much press, they get associated with Big C Church. And mm-hmm. and it sounds like mm-hmm. that is the perspective Christians have. And so yeah. I know that's maybe a little controversial, but...
It may be a little controversial, yeah. but it's not controversial to Gen Z.
Right, exactly.
Gen Z very much trusts in science. They trust that scientists' explanation of climate change is accurate. And here's the other thing. The United Methodist Church... global climate stewardship, in that same section with the science, it says, we acknowledge the global impact of humanity's disregard for God's creation. I love that sentence. It's the yeah. perfect way to theologically situate climate change, right? The yeah. global impact of humanity's disregard for God's creation. Like, we recognize that greenhouse gas emissions alter the Earth's climate for generations, like all of that. That's our perspective. And it's a unique thing in the church world. And depending on where you are, it might be very unique within your context.
True. Yeah.
And it's one of those things that if you can find ways to communicate that, if you can find ways to make that known, that this is who we are, this is what we believe, all of a sudden you sort of get the lean in from the Generation Z and millennials, right? They say, oh, wait a second. I didn't know there was a church like that. Maybe that's the church I want to try out. Maybe those are the people I want to go to.
And that's why our job as church communicators and even church marketing folks is so vitally important, is because sometimes these things aren't getting communicated.
Right.
And as we all know, you know, press and even social media tends to go to and present the things that generate the most rage or fear,
right.
You know, and the measured voice of the Methodist Church is not always that. And so our job is important. And that's where we're going to end today's episode of the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast. But you no doubt picked up that this was not the end of my conversation with Jeremy about reaching Gen Z. Next, we're going to feature the second half of our conversation in part two of Reaching Gen Z. And trust me, you do not want to miss how Jeremy sums up everything we talked about. But until then, listeners, we want to hear from you. Is reaching Gen Z on your church's radar? If so, what are you doing about it? And if the answer is maybe not yet, what more do you hope to learn as this massive generation comes of age? You can email us at podcast@umcom.org, and we just might share your stories or thoughts or questions on a future episode. And you can, of course, always use that email, podcast@umcom.org, to send us any feedback or topic suggestions you have for the show. We always love hearing from you. Finally, if you found this podcast to be helpful, and you'd like to make sure other church communicators like yourself find this resource, the two biggest things you can do are share this episode with your friends and colleagues and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or whatever service you're listening to us on right now. Thanks again for listening to the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast.